Hi, this is Matthew Kale here again, and this is 1620 Talk, Cannabis Communication for Veterans on Millennium Grown Broadcast Network. It is September 11th, and this is a very important show, as it is a very important anniversary. We are celebrating, appreciating, and remembering all of the fallen. So I'll be asking a variety of people about what this day means to them, including a number of people involved in a lawsuit to allow cannabis access for PTSD patients within the great state of Colorado. I thought I was going to have Dean Bortel with me here along for the ride to keep this ship afloat, but he's a lot more congenial than this old infantry grunt. But he's not going to be here. Instead, we have a few other guests here. Matt Stice will be here, and there will be yet another Matt. We will keep his last name confidential. And Delaney Mason. Let me tell you what I think of September 11th. And really, for me, it's about freedom, more so than anything. When 9/11 happened for me, I was devastated, much like the rest of the country. They were attacking our home. My home. I lived in New York City at the time, and I wasn't there, but I watched it happen on TV just like the rest of us, and they were attacking my home. So immediately, you know, the thought came to me that it was time to fight. It's time to defend America. And really, when I think about defending America, I think about defending freedom. It's defending freedom. That's what we stand for. That is the fundamental difference between us and every other nation on the face of the planet, is freedom. So, of course, what I plan to do for my 9/11 is, I am fortunate enough to live in a state where it's legal to both cultivate and consume cannabis, both marijuana and hemp. So I'm here to both educate and indeed evangelize you. Some may call me the cannabis evangelist, and this may be my first church. So welcome, brothers and sisters. Join hands and let us pray. So we have on the line with us Matthew Cook. Is Matt there? We're not hearing Matt.
Okay. Is this any better?
Here he is. Matt, you there? Well, we don't have audio on you yet.
Okay.
Matt, are you there?
I'm here, loud and clear. Lee with Charlie. What's up, man?
Excellent. So you are a recent Colorado transplant, shall we say.
Yeah, another one of those assholes, yeah. One of the people
So where did you move from?
I came out from Ohio after I got out of the Army. I had family in Ohio. I stayed with them through the holidays, and then my girlfriend and I decided to move out here. We had looked at a couple places out west. It was not strictly because of the cannabis laws, although I'm really happy to live in a state with some common sense, and really glad I'm here now. Really glad I'm here now.
Yeah, so exactly what is it about Colorado that makes so much more common sense?
The biggest thing to me is taking away the – man, you, like, put me on the spot. I don't have any prepared statements. So we had a little Colorado session with a bunch of really nice people a little while ago, and I've not been interviewed in a long time or even spoken on the air with anyone in a long time. So if I ramble, please just tell. But it's great to me to live in a place that recognizes that a plant – it's far, far, far less dangerous in the hands of adults than it is as in the clutches of a black market. You look at how Colorado has roared out of the recession in the last 3 years. I'm no expert. That's your job. But it seems to me it's far, far better than ruining people's lives and creating a, or continuing, perpetuating a permanent underclass in this country with a drug war. And the fact that Colorado said the shit is retarded, if you'll excuse my language, that's very inappropriate. You shouldn't say.
Hey, this is a veteran show for veterans, so you know, we can cut all the mess out later. So
why am I the only guy talking?
Well, actually, that's a good point that you make there about Colorado roaring out of the recession. And then I want to talk to Delaney Mason about that a little bit, since she's involved in a project called Fourth Corner Credit Union. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Okay, and now Fourth Corner Credit Union was designed to be the first cannabis credit union in Colorado, right?
Exactly. We want to serve an underserved population right now, and that's the cannabis industry.
So, and there's been some roadblocks to that recently, right?
Yeah, we were recently rejected for our master account. So we filed a lawsuit against the National Credit Union Association and the Kansas Federal Reserve.
So now the master account, explain what that is.
It's basically the account we need to be part of the FDIC. We want to be regulated just like any other credit union. We want to follow all the rules. We want to make sure that we can provide a less risky environment amongst the cannabis industry. We want to make sure that dispensaries that supply to patients can have a stable bank account so they can constantly supply to their patients, which is really important. I could go on about it. I don't know if you have any more specific questions.
We got all the time in the world, so
yeah,
I do have a few questions. So the Fourth Corner Credit Union, it was denied this master account. And now, who exactly denied that? Is that the Fed?
Well, we applied for the master account with the Federal Reserve, and they rejected us on the grounds that we were dealing with cannabis, which is still illegal under federal law. Basically, is what they surmised it as.
Okay, and that's I was under the impression that banks were credit unions or something like that. You're going to have to illuminate me on this.
Sure.
Within the state of Colorado, they didn't actually need some kind of a federal approval, that they could actually, as long as all their business was in state, they could still operate. Is that true at all?
Yeah, some banks are able to take accounts, and they do, but the second they're under, like, extreme scrutiny and investigation for any type of criminal deviance that they might see going on. So the second that they figure out that you're associated with the cannabis industry, you will be shut down. A lot of dispensaries in Colorado, their ATM systems and things like that are under a different business name, so the bank never finds out that they're associated with cannabis.
So the basic situation that you're trying to alleviate is what? The extreme wash of cash that Colorado is now drowning in?
Exactly. Businesses aren't able to perform everyday functions. They're not able to pay their employees with direct deposit. They're not able to take out business loans. They're not able to do really a lot with only cash. A lot of things you do, you need a little bit more than just a little bit of cash in your pocket. It's just, we want to provide that stable banking environment. We don't want people who have been burned so many times with their accounts closed to get burned again when they work with us. You know, we came out open about what we're associated with. We want to be regulated. This is one of the last things the industry needs to become a real industry, I think. Like, in the eyes of the federal government, I think banking is one of the last tiers of it.
Okay, so the cash situation in Colorado, is there any idea of exactly how much of it is out there? Like, I mean, obviously, we're just drowning in it. I mean, it's just, if you work for any period of time in the cannabis industry, it's ridiculous if you do security work. I mean, there's like duffel bags of cash and suitcases. People.
Where is it now? I really don't know. Like, is it in banks and safety deposits?
I can tell you.
Is it in warehouses with, like, dudes that they are?
Yeah, basically, it's being guarded
really?
By armed guards. Some people are as ballsy enough to have it in their own homes, bury it in their yards, basically do charity work. People have all this cash. They're buying real estate. Like, people have all this cash. They don't know what to do with it. They don't have anywhere to put it. It's ridiculous.
Let me ask you
this.
How do they deliver the taxes to the state of Colorado? I really don't know. They walk that in duffel bags to somebody?
Yeah, I know. In Denver, we've got like a 26% tax. I mean, like, it's like when you're working in the industry, I mean, you pay your taxes.
Well, of course.
Yeah,
so at the end of the day or the end of the week or the month or the quarter or whatever,
yeah.
Again, you're walking with duffel bags or briefcases full of cash into federal or state
some
government,
people,
right? I don't know where
they must pay. They're paying their tax bills in dollar bills, right?
Yeah. I mean, I would believe so. I mean, how else can you pay your taxes if you can't put your money in a bank or anything like that? I mean,
wow.
All right. We're going to have to rein this in. Everybody's got to get close to the source of the mic here.
Bring it in. We got a bunch of...
Everybody drag a chair over.
All right.
Okay, resume.
All right. The main thing is, if we're paying these taxes and they're putting that money in the bank to pay off their businesses, and, you know, the state, they can't do that with that money either.
Not well.
Because this money, these taxes are made with cannabis money, so they're violating federal law.
So
they have to pay with cash, too, because if any of that money goes in the bank, that bank has to be shut down.
There must be a way for it. They must have it.
The state government can only use it within the state.
They're only able to use it within the state because it's a state-based income, I guess, at the basis of it. So what I've read in my research is that they are putting it into the school system and things like that. So hopefully, you know, our public school systems will get a little bit better here in Colorado from all of our pot money.
Well, there's an interesting thing that's going on now. I think at the turn of the year, it was a big question because, you know, we went legal in 2014. So the first year that we were actually going to pay taxes on a lot of this recreational stuff was 2015. And when 2015 rolled around, everybody's really nervous about the federal government. What the heck's the federal government going to do? And at the time, I was employed in the industry, and I know for a fact that there were several dispensary owners that got slapped with huge astronomical tax bills, like, you know, million, 2 million, you know, a couple like that. You know, it's kind of amazing. And the federal government, aren't they actually violating their own laws by accepting this money?
Yes. If they're receiving it, I mean, I guess that's the key.
Hey,
you need a damn tax attorney probably to sell it for sure. But, I mean, yeah, if the state's just using within the state, maybe they can. If they're giving it to the Fed, it wouldn't surprise me at all. I'm sure they have a workaround that makes it, you know, either something they can or can't do, and we'll do it if they can.
I can sure tell you the money smells like pot, so. It reeks of pot when they get it, so, I mean, you know where it comes from.
That's actually really funny because this is another thing that has popped up in my mind recently. Like, what the heck did they do with all the drug dogs now that they've trained to detect marijuana? You know, like if you're not able if that's not actually a valid signal from the dog to the owner, then they got to get rid of those dogs. What are they going to do with those dogs?
Be trained, maybe.
They
got enough farm out in the country.
Well, you know, they're still getting plenty of work in all the other states that have it. Right along the border of Colorado.
Just
cross
the border
work all day.
Okay. Well, I'm going to shift gears here a little bit. And one of the things that I personally harp about is the sacred human right to grow plants, all plants, in a manner they see fit. So if I have the land to grow it, I should get to grow whatever the heck I want to, right? And personally, I don't care if it's tomatoes, wheat, hemp, marijuana, peyote, poppies, or GMO corn for that matter. It's your God-given right to do so. So I think that it's really important that we examine this plant in a manner that is not really consistent with the idea of medication, honestly. And I may ruffle a lot of feathers by saying this, but it, to me, it's more of an agricultural product. It's more like corn or bell peppers
or
wheat. Yes, tobacco, sorghum. You know, this is something that should be on the supermarket shelf, I guess, you know. And it's remarkably safe. It's actually safer than most of the over-the-counter drugs that you use to treat your common cold. So it's obviously quite safe and reasonable to put it on a shelf and have regular customers come in and buy it. So to that effect, what exactly do you think about gaining the title of medical marijuana patient? Is that a taboo?
No.
And this is Steve DeFino on the line. Steve?
Hello. How's it going?
Hey, what's up? So, no, absolutely not, right?
No, there's a difference. I mean, you have recreational and you have medical. The difference between medical is you're going to have a lot stronger marijuana, and it's going to have a lot more flavor, and it's going to do more. It's going to activate more in your body. You know, recreational, it's grown on a mass scale. Don't really care what's going into it. Don't care really how it comes out, as long as it gets you high. And that's effective for some things, but when you have certain debilitating diseases, you have to have medical marijuana. It takes a certain person to be able to grow medical marijuana. I mean, anybody can grow weed, and that's the recreational part. But for true medical marijuana, you have to have a little bit of science and understanding of the plant.
A lot.
Yeah, exactly.
And that leads us into the entourage effect. Now, I know, Steve, you're pretty good there with the terpenes there, bud. Talk to me about your strain.
Thank you. Which strain do you want to talk about?
Talk to me about Ronin.
Ronin, okay. Ronin right now is on hold because my last cross, actually 90% of it harmed for some reason. So the male that we've been using is starting to degrade for some odd reason. It could have been the original cross. Maybe something wasn't right, but we're actually having to totally redo it all. We had some progress, and it's great, but we're kind of stuck in the middle right now. We're trying to get a few more strains and some more testing done. And when it comes to testing, that, you know, it costs money, and we're kind of hurting right now for that. So once we get more funds, we can continue with terpene testing. Target the terpenes, make the crosses, and create an actual strain that's going to be strictly for PTSD.
So talk to me about the terpene strategy.
So basically, as far as terpenes go, we find a terpene that works for us, and we go, okay, why does this work for us? What does it do? Where does it go into the body, and how does it affect it? And basically, once we find that terpene that works for us, we take that cross. And if we find another terpene we're curious about, if we're able to lock those two terpenes in on the next cross, we get that testing, we start to see sort of a treatment condition. And then on top of that, you can't have a low amount. I mean, we're talking a super high amount of terpenes. That flavor has to be off the wall. When you open up the jar, you need to take back. You know, you're like, holy crap. I mean, that's where the real medical benefit is. I mean, the strength in THC is great, but the terpenes is really what's healing you.
Well, I know that for a fact, that that's what I search for when I go to a dispensary, or for that matter, when I'm going around sampling other people's wares, is almost always you got to open up the sack and it's got to stink.
Right, right. Otherwise, it's just getting high. You're not activating the synapses. You're not activating anything, really. You're just getting high. The THC is absorbing into your bloodstream, and that's great. But when you have severe PTSD, or you have cerebral palsy, or whatever it could be, any disability that really affects your life to where you cannot go out in public and just have a normal everyday conversation with people, I mean, you need something very strong.
So the terpenes, it's so interesting. Some of the research I've been doing, and I like myrcene, for instance, is it has a slightly sedative effect to it, and limonene has an anti-anxiety effect, and linalool has another anti-anxiety and sedative effect. It also functions as an antidepressant. Terpenylene is another one that's great for PTSD. And if you can manage to combine all of these terpenes into one plant, you could potentially have an extremely effective tool against PTSD, right?
Absolutely. You could, without using any sort of concentrate, with just flower, you could eliminate PTSD. Not entirely, but what you're doing is you're activating the endocannabinoid system, you're hitting the CB1 and CB2 receptors, and in turn activates the endocannabinoid system, which fires those synapses, which allow you to recover from those, you know, violent thoughts and shit, you know, it takes you back, and you don't want that, so we're trying to stop it.
What I thought that would work the best for that, like, you're trying to breed into the most
fun. Yeah, this is Doug, right?
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
Okay, so Doug, you got some pretty good strains in your cabinet there. I know you got like a nice 1-to-1 ratio harlequin that is, now we're talking cannabinoids, not terpenes. Now, what other things you got going on?
What I noticed, like with PTSD and different things is, you know, especially with the breeding and that, trying to mix the two strains is like you don't get the effect you always want. It doesn't work out as well as you hope it to be. But I thought of just mixing the two leaves together, just mix the two strains. Grow two separate plants, mix those together, and you get an awesome result. And I, you know, I've been medicating for a long time. That's all I use is cannabis. And I found out it's when you mix the strains is where your potency is, where you can relax, you get the whole body, where you can just get the balance. And you can't get that with one plant. Not yet.
Now these are strains. These are strains that they're.
Right. It is so amazing how it heals the human body.
So now these are strains that are simply not available on the medical market, right?
That's true.
I mean, sorry, right. on the recreational market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Recreational, right? A lot of it's out of the medical market too. They
which is
so fast, they're breeding everything out of it. They're still breeding THC. And that's why the private growers are so important.
Amber alert.
Really?
All right, we're having a little bit of technical difficulties here. Amber alert. We got weather coming in. Okay, everybody's cell phone is going off. It's going crazy in here. All right, well, that leads us perfectly into another segue. So, like, these strains are simply not available on the recreational market, which is one of the reasons why PTSD patients, they need access to medical marijuana, not recreational marijuana, medical marijuana. And that's what we're trying to do with the CDPHE and the Board of Health. That failed spectacularly in, I think, what was that, June? June, it failed spectacularly on the 15th. The Board of Health managed to ignore both their chief medical officer and their scientific advisory council's advice, and they turned it down. They rejected PTSD as a qualifying condition for a red card here in Colorado. And we have recently been joined here by Larissa Bolivar. Can she come a little bit closer to the mic and say hello? There goes the cell phones again.
Intense. See if it shows up anywhere else. A text message or something. Negative.
But I bring weather with me. Yeah, I can hang on. Hey, what's up?
Hey, Larissa, how you doing? So you are another one of the plaintiffs here in lawsuit against the Colorado Board of Health and CDPHE. Now, we've already talked about, the sorts of strains that we need as PTSD patients simply aren't available on the recreational market, but there's a hell of a lot more reasons why we need access, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's absolutely true that the access is not there. I even checked out just to see, you know, the other day, like this past week, I was driving around dispensaries and checking just to see, and, you know, whether it's medical or recreational, they're just not there. But other reasons that are important are relationships with your doctor, being able to have an honest relationship with, like, your therapist, for example, and be able to tell them that cannabis is helping without being fearful of them not wanting to help you because you're using a substance as a crutch, like alcohol, as opposed to medicine, which is not the case with PTSD because there is science behind why it works. And if they were to just, you know, if we have the opportunity to have that documented, then we could, you know, start documenting what treatments work for what people for the types of trauma that they have endured, in addition to documenting the strain. So.
I've been through all of this.
You've been through all of this. I think I've met you before, right? You look familiar. I don't know why. Maybe it's speakeasy? Yeah. Facebook, yeah, it's on Facebook.
So, okay.
For me, that's the primary reason. The other is to collect data because we can't wait for doctors this week to be able to get the medicine that she needs. The quality of medicine that she's going to be getting is not going to be great. So we need to start getting data now. People are killing themselves now. We have no idea actually how many, you know, the actual total suicide rate for PTSD in general, combining veterans and other sufferers, women in particular, who are the silent majority.
Yeah, that's a huge issue here. And I think, you know, that's something we really got to visit here is that veterans, okay, you know, we're the big public face of PTSD right now. You know, oh, wow, look at the poor veteran, you know. But the real, we're the tip of the iceberg. The real body of this thing is women. Women are subjected to all kinds of triggers for PTSD in their lives, whether it's domestic violence or maybe childhood abuse. Or sexual assault, all the above can cause, even accidents, for God's sake, can cause PTSD. The general population has far more PTSD sufferers in general than veterans. We are a tiny portion of the population. We may have a higher incidence, but the vast majority of people are out there with PTSD are women.
Well, women, you know, children, you're right. I mean, any type of trauma where you witness death or you think that you yourself are going to die, that triggers the trauma response, is going to create a memory of that, and you're going to have triggers. And we're just now understanding the trauma response and PTSD. And fortunately, it is because of veterans that we're able to really, you know, narrow in on this on PTSD and start addressing it, and then we can start bringing back up the issues that women face, because bringing up PTSD in women is a huge Pandora's box in terms of the criminal justice system and society in general. Because my own experience with being a victim of assault and the criminal justice system is a complete utter failure. I wasn't protected against the guy that was threatening to kill me after he tried killing me. And so that's a huge failure. And, you know, there's other ways that we should be addressing this so that women can find avenues for healing. And if cannabis is one of those avenues, which has done miracles to me, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for it. I mean, it's just the truth. Mm-hmm. And I think none of us would be. I mean, So, you know, by speaking out and then, you know, it kind of is being kind of controversial, hopefully it'll spark the conversation up in terms of women and trauma. But the way the media has reacted, I don't really think so. Like, nobody's reaching out to me about the women and trauma side of things. So that's kind of interesting because it's not sensational. Well, not for the media at least. You're like, oh, another woman got raped. And that's not great. Like, you know, so we have to fix that. But, you know, at least we can piggyback the women's issues with the veterans' issues, and, you know, it's very honorable to be working.
Well, this is something I actually think, you know, veterans, we're used to picking up a flag and carrying it home. and we've been trained to do that. We've been doing it now for a long time. And when we get out, nobody really relieved us of the oath that we took to protect and defend the Constitution against enemies, both foreign and domestic. And I think that a lot of veterans, we're coming back home and we're seeing that our country is not what we thought it was going to be. And we are becoming the moral voice of America. And we are happy to pick up this flag and carry it home for all those other nameless, faceless PTSD sufferers out there, because we're used to fighting for other people. And I think that the veteran voice in this, I think we can really make a difference. And as the tip of the spear, essentially, you know, and we can make a big difference in this issue.
Absolutely.
And I know mixing the strings helps a lot with PTSD. I got some strings, you mix those two together, you can't remember shit.
I do like the CBD THC 101 ratio. Yeah, anyway. I love them.
Everybody's taking this for granted. I mean, I learned, you dropped a lot of science a little while ago, man, and I learned a lot. Chemicals. I know some of those words, but not a lot of the time. It's really interesting.
There's a lot to learn about. Look, there's so much people don't know, and there's so much that's just out there that people can go on the internet and look up and say, oh, that makes sense. But you got to look for the right place to find it. And when you do, you start seeing a pattern. And that pattern starts to say, okay, we got to do this A, we got to do this B, and this makes C. But it takes a couple years. And it took me, I'm learning, well, 3.5 years of research now. And it's still, there's so much I still have yet to learn.
Well, and have they really been able to study it the same way that, you know, you look at, like, peer review for, in science, in the scientific method, and for going to, like, journals, and I'm no scientist by any means. But you look at that, and you see the capability they've had for as long as we've had modern pharmacology. How much of that time has this black market been in place, where very few, you know, legitimate research places could even study this,
right,
and could even discover a lot of things that
or even discuss it,
or even discuss it legally. Absolutely, much less get any kind of granting for to study this stuff.
I think this is really going to get the lid blown off. I'm pretty sure that Big Pharma, their entire model of science is kind of to fashion this purified substance that is only one substance, and they're looking for this magic bullet that will just take out a disease. And the fact is, there is no magic bullet. And cannabis is not a magic bullet for anything. What it is, it's a synergistic shotgun, and it will blow away many different ailments from this one plant if we just tinker with the ingredients a little bit of terpenes here, maybe a little bit of minor cannabinoids there, and suddenly you can get a profoundly different effect, and you can affect almost any system in the body, whether it's the psychiatry, PTSD, depression, anxiety, or it's diabetes or bone growth. It can stimulate bone growth. There's all kinds of stuff.
Right.
There's not a single physiological system that this is not involved in. And
right.
I think that this plant is probably going to get medical science back around to starting to think about entourage effect in a much larger sense. And they're going to, for instance, just 10, 15 years ago, I think they started combining smaller levels of Tylenol and aspirin together to achieve a greater effect in relieving headaches. And but, you know, it's reducing the toxicity by reducing the total amount of Tylenol and aspirin that you're taking. And your body's now processing two different things on a much smaller level, and it's much easier for your body to handle that. So we'll start probably combining lots of different plants together. There is a vast quantity of plants out there that we have not even touched. Schedule one, almost
right.
All of them. And you're talking about things like mushrooms and ibogaine or iboga and ayahuasca, peyote. There's all kinds of things. Some of these things have been shown to be effective for end-of-life anxiety, cluster headaches. There's all kinds of things. Depression, anxiety issue. I already said anxiety. But, yeah, it's amazing what these plants can do, and we've only really just scratched the surface. So
yeah.
If we just legalize these plants, I mean, if it grows from the ground, can it be just friggin' legal?
That is just, to me, though, that is still the major issue, is that you have the majority of society who have, for whatever reasons, whether it was propaganda or their own beliefs that weren't influenced by propaganda or were, that, you know, the only acceptable, not stimulant, the only acceptable euphoria in our society for 50 or 75 or 100 years has really been food. There's always been
That's why they use it. They legalize it because you're gonna fail. You're gonna alcohol.
Well, yes. Well, that's not too conspiratorial. That is scary. And again, puts you back in the criminal justice system. Puts you back in the insurance.
But the question is, do they know back? Right,
they
didn't do that.
It's legal.
They just
didn't like it back then.
Well, a little out of racist as hell.
Yeah.
They were like,
all right, let's rein it in one at a time. I can't hear anybody.
Fair enough. If I could go back really quickly to, you know, the idea of women and men as sufferers of assault, violence, sexual assault, sexual violence, and their levels of PTSD, I really hope we see, within our lifetimes at least, the kind of advances in mental health with people suffering from PTSD that we've seen in the prosthetics, and the gains that have been made in that just in the last 15 years of warfare. Why have we not made significant advances? I mean, the answer is because this is like the silent killer. It's the invisible war.
But at first, because I was tracking this myself, I got my bachelor's in psychology and my minor's in communications from 2008 until 2015. And I was trying to figure this out myself. Why was the PTSD getting a lot of attention? Why are they, because the SSRIs that killed me and with the Xanax. And then I was studying with veterans. And it's because at one point the military was looking at it as a weakness, and they didn't want to admit it. And the weakness being that they weren't not only that a mental condition is a weakness, was you can compartmentalize that, but that they admitted that that was a problem, and that's another huge thing that they have.
In my experience, I only joined in 2007, but it wasn't until 2010 where if you were an E7. Or a young officer or something like that, if you came back from a deployment and said, this is in the infantry, if you came back from a deployment and said that you need to go to mental health, you wouldn't get a platoon. You wouldn't get a company.
This is a huge stigma in the armed forces.
I mean, it was bad. It was really, really bad for a lot of guys. E5s, E6s who had been in and seen that already, they were even more resistant than those guys were. And it was only 5 years after I'd been in where, they changed the... It became more of a, it's a sign of strength, the right attitude. It's a sign of strength to seek help, not a sign of weakness. And
I got to say, being in during that transition, there was a lot of talk about it, and at the highest levels, it seemed like everybody was on board with it. But as it trickled down, the message got lost, and at the soldier level, soldiers still with PTSD and psychological issues were abused right and left, kicked out, and simply just they were taken advantage of, and I think it's wrong to stigmatize somebody who's been to war and has fought for you like that already, and come back home, and then what do? You hem him up in a psychiatric institution, you throw him in involuntary lockup, what?
It was a homeless race, man. It's disgusting.
But real quick, while I was trying to figure out where was, why PTSD was not being addressed, whether through the military or with women, and just in general, there was a case, and it was the Army, and there was a woman who was institutionalized, but she was in a military hospital, I think, and she flipped out, I think, killed the person, and they were trying. Yeah, and I think that, and I don't remember what, it might have been 2009, 2010, like between 2008 and 2010, and it was like I was in the D.C. area, and you know, it was all military industrial complex there, and this was huge news then, because you know they were trying to convict her of being a murderer and not even allow her to address PTSD, and they wouldn't, like, they had, like, it had such a profound effect, and I think that moment in time was the turning point when they're like, wait a minute, we can't have people in the hospital killing people and sweeping that under the rug, because, oh, and then here in Fort Carson, it was also that, remember that guy that was out?
I didn't hear about this.
Yeah, and this was like around that same time, I think, or maybe a year.
2009?
Yeah, it all came to like a point, and then that's when I noticed that there was a shift in addressing it.
What I want to know is, so, I had a buddy, when I got out of service, he was CFO, and he stayed with me in California, and this guy used to have major issues. I mean, wake up, sweating. I mean, he'd be cold, hit me underneath the tail and shit. I'd be like, dude, what's wrong? He goes, they're coming. I'm like, dude, who's coming? And, you know, he used to drink himself silly every night just to get to sleep.
Well, I think a lot of us did when we got back from overseas.
And even back then, you know, the VA, there was never no help for anybody. You know, there's never no help. And the government wants you to quit. The VA, I swear to God, they want you to give up, commit suicide, so this way they ain't got to deal with it. Okay, your numbers are gone, you know, we got rid of them. And that's the way they look at it. Because you're looking at guys right now, they're pissing on their breach of Botox. I mean, that's literally disgusting, ridiculous. You're saying it's helping? I mean, they're just torturing guys for jokes because they have nothing else to do. So it's a joke to them, the way they torture veterans at the VA.
Yeah, there was some news that came out recently. There's still like 800,000 backlogs, and supposedly that was supposed to be fixed. And now they're saying, oh, yeah, we still have issues.
Yeah, I take my uncle to the VA. He's a Vietnam vet, like, at least once a month, if not more. And it's not only the most depressing place, it's so frustrating. I'm always battling on the front of them, but...
I give up.
Yeah, and then when I hear that they cut funding, I'm like, for what? They don't have anything. Like,
the best thing they ever had to do, the VA threw me in a psych ward. I never took another pill, and I went straight to cannabis, and it saved my life.
Yeah, I don't.
People don't understand. They say, you know, there's no medical, you know, no medical need for cannabis. If you see my body with all the X-rays and MRIs, you'd be made of walking like a play frisbee golf. There's nothing you can't do again recently, the old thing. I mean, it's like being a kid again, being reborn.
Funny you mentioned that because I have a guy who is in the Denver area, and he had his entire spine replaced with 3.5-inch screws and plates, and he, you know, we served him with some oil, and he says it's the only thing that's keeping him out of the emergency room every day. Every single day, and he's starting to come off the opiates, and he's doing quite well. Matt Stice, you want to chime in here? I see you over there in the corner, buddy.
What's going on? I don't know. Since I've gotten out in 2009, I've worked with organizations like national organizations, and I was just at a national convention for an organization, Build a Veterans, and one of the things that I noticed was really frustrating that, you know, here are a bunch of veterans from all over the country that are having a hard time getting safe access to cannabis, and not only safe access, but also the expense that comes with, you know, the price of cannabis in different states, and I found that it's just disgusting that, you know, here in Colorado, we enjoy the benefits of the law. You know, I mean, obviously, there's a lot of hurdles we still have to, cross. But as it is, you know, we're really lucky here in Colorado. Because when I was in Tennessee this past weekend, it was really frustrating. I mean, people didn't even want to pack bowls; they were packing half bowls, and you know, like everybody, you high on that, and we're like, yeah, sure, whatever, you know, like. But that's sad, you know, like, why is it like that? Everybody should have the same access that we have here in Colorado, and that's one of the things that I'm trying to work with other veterans and those that are, you know, fighting the good fight with us to do across the board. Because, you know, not only do we have issues that we have to work on here in Colorado, but nationally and worldwide, you know, this is just a joke, and we need to change what's going on with cannabis.
God gave us this plant. It pops right out of the ground, for God's sake. I mean, if it does that, shouldn't everybody have access?
That's right.
Well, we're rolling up at the 10-minute mark.
In our bodies, our endocannabinoid systems in our own bodies, we have it already, you know, we have the same components. I think we should have a biological right to an alternative, you know, way to medicate yourself. I don't think it's fair to be denied something that's already in your system. It's just ridiculous.
Absolutely.
Yeah. They don't want to have that.
Yeah. And that's the problem. This plant needs to be given away. Everybody needs to be able to try it.
Yeah.
If it works. It's just like any other medication. It doesn't work for everyone. But if you're able to try it, it's the safest medication that's out there. I mean, I lost my mind on some of these pills that I used to take.
Oh, the SSRIs are terrible.
This
doesn't do anything for PTSD.
No,
I'm like, this
they just make it worse.
They're no better than
placebo.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Took away my guns because they said their pills made me totally incompetent and I wasn't able to function.
See, that's a whole other.
They probably attacked me.
Can of worms right there.
Everybody physically, emotionally. With the meds, everything the VA did.
This is a major, major point. This is the only real substitute for pharmaceutical medications now in America. And, you know, if you have a psychiatric issue, your only option is to dope yourself up on ungodly amounts of pharmaceutical medications, which will completely destroy you. I mean, I was on, you know, 15, 20 meds depending on the given month, what the doctors felt like, you know, how froggy they were feeling. And it started to shut down my liver and my kidneys. I was dying before everybody's eyes. And this plant, it saved me. So on that tip, you know, we're getting down to the wire here. It's about 8 minutes left. So we'd like to give a shout-out to Ty, Margene, and Robert from Cannabis Connection to Colorado Springs. They were kind enough to bring out some goodies for our veterans today. So if you have some cannabis needs, get connected with Cannabis Connection for all your medicinal cannabis needs. And so let me go on my little tirade here. And a lot of these points I hit on in this program. And the primary thing is that veterans are coming back home in increasing numbers to find the ideals that they fought for, the Constitution they swore to defend, are under attack by the very institutions that are meant to guard them. No one relieved us of this oath to defend the Constitution, and when confronted with grave injustice, any conscientious citizen should stand up, speak out, and fight for the justice denied to their countrymen. Veterans, you know, we've been trained and we're accustomed to picking up that flag, and we carry it home. So don't be surprised when we get back home to find a flag buried in the muck. We will pick it back up, we'll brush it off, and we'll carry it home. No man left behind, and no women either. Whether you have PTSD or not, you deserve access to this plant. I don't care what your issue is or whether you even have an issue at all, you deserve access to this plant. So veterans, listen up. You are the moral voice of America. No one has invested in society how we have. No one has shed the blood, the sweat, the tears, and no one else has buried those bodies draped in the American flag. You have a vested interest in making America work, more so than anyone else in society. America has lost its way somehow, and it's up to you to bring her back. So from here on out, you're on notice. It's high time to take America back. This is 1620 Talk on NGBN. Thank you, and good night.